Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Around 750 million people live on the European continent. So what about it? What will its future look like? Will there ever be a United States of Europe? For this and more, you will hear from European thought leaders, artists, civil society representatives, and all those who care about its future. You will receive key insights into the ways Europe is changing and how your voice can be part of this. I am Paolo De Stilo, and you're listening to Europe Matters. Today I'm joined by Nini Tsiklaudi, an artist, author, and she's a European activist who grew up in Hungary, Georgia, and Germany. But beyond being an artist, she's also a renowned actor in Germany. She speaks 5 languages and firmly believes in the power of civil society, which can tear down borders and unite Europe. In 2017, she started the citizens' movement Pools of Europe in Vienna and the project Europe Lab Austria. And with the Young European Collective, she published appeals to the young European generation, such as the book Who If Not Us? A 4-step guide to empower Europe and our generation. Also, in her last book, Let's Fight for Europe, she makes a fiery plea for a common solidarity and united Europe as a beacon of peace and freedom. And, okay, as I already said, due to her fame as an actress among young people in German-speaking countries, she inspires young people in particular for political engagement. She's also very committed in the Georgian-European relations. Welcome, Nini. Thank you very much for accepting this invitation.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for the invitation.
So, can I ask, where are you currently at? Are you in Georgia or are you in Germany? Where do you stay at?
Currently, I'm in Vienna, where I'm also working, and where's my home base actually? But I would say Europe. Yeah.
How long ago did you actually enter, the European Union, not Europe, because some people say Georgia is part of Europe, others find it a little bit more difficult. When was that?
It was in 1996, if I'm right, or maybe 4, when I was a little child. So, my history is a little bit long, but to make it short, I was born in Tiflis, in Tbilisi, in Georgia. And so my parents and me came to Hungary in the middle of the 90s. And I think this was the first time for me being outside of Georgia and being in the European, on the European ground. And then we came back to Georgia in the end of the 90s and stayed there for 3 years. And I changed the languages, the script, the school. And then we decided to go back to the European Union, to Germany, actually, in 2002, in October. And since then, I'm living in the EU, 2002.
and do you still go back to Georgia time to time?
From time to time, when it's possible. And because of the COVID situation, it's a little bit difficult right now. The numbers are getting high also right now. So I hope I can go back very soon, because my grandma is waiting and waiting and she's all alone. So yeah, this is her biggest wish.
And so except from family, do you also have other ties that take you to Georgia, or is it only the family roots?
In first line, the family roots, but of course the political situation is always there in our minds when I speak with my parents, with my family, and it's part of daily business. And it's so hard to fight for the Georgians. I feel like I'm fighting for years right now for my fellow Georgians to have a chance to join the European community one day, or the Western community one day.
Have they applied to enter the European Union?
Since I can think, people are ready for it. Are ready for it with their hearts. They want democracy. They want the rule of law. They want human rights and the European values. They want to live them. They're ready to die for them. And I saw it at the Rose Revolution. I saw it in 2008. I saw it at the Euromaidan, where many Georgians also risked their lives or gave their lives for the European values. So this is the most important topic. Also in schools, in the kindergarten, when you're born, it's the number one topic at the table when you're eating with your family. So somehow I've got it always with me. And but the system is the problem, and the politics, and how the leaders make politics and for whom they make politics. That's also a big question, because my generation has the sentiment that the leaders that came into politics since 2012 are mainly doing politics for themselves, but not for the people. And this has to change. And so my biggest hope for my generation is to one day communicate with each other, because we are all around the world, and also all around Europe. My younger colleagues from Georgia who are also studying, who are also fighting for the same goal. Nearly everyone is studying political science or international relations or international development, just because they want to go back one day and make the dream come true, that the country is able to actually live with the European values and respect them and cherish them, so that the European Union sees that we're ready.
Yeah, because if I'm not mistaken, Georgia is a unitary parliamentary constitutional republic, right? So since how long actually has it been a republic in its actual state?
We gained the independence in the early 90s when the Soviet Union collapsed. There are many movements on the streets, bloody movements. Actually, there is 20% of the country still occupied from Russian troops. And part of my family is also on the territory. So it's also very hard for me emotionally to think about this topic, because I know that I will never be able to visit them for a lifetime until this conflict can be resolved. But I don't see any solution in the next years for this frozen conflict. And I wonder how long it will go on. And yes, it's, I don't know if you heard about the conflict and if you heard about the war in 2008.
That's the thing. No, there's not so much news about Georgia and what happens around that area. And that is also kind of the interesting part of this project as well, but of understanding what's going around Europe in the whole. It's not only about European Union, but it's about understanding what's going on around, and also that there is this sentiment, a European sentiment also outside of the European Union as we know it, as the de facto one. But if you would like to maybe highlight a little bit more what happened in 2008.
It was called the Russo-Georgian War, and it was a war between Russia, Georgia, and the Russia-backed self-proclaimed republics of South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And the war took place in August in 2008, so 13 years ago. And it was a period of worsening relations between Russia and Georgia, and both formerly constituent republics of the Soviet Union. And I was in the middle of the war with my family back then. And we had a lot of luck that we were able to flee from the country. Because we didn't know how long it would last. We had no idea that it would last 5 days or months after that. So when the Russian troops were 20 kilometers from Tbilisi, my parents and part of my family helped us to get away from the east to the west so that we could cross the border from Georgia to Turkey and then to take the next flight to the European Union so it could come back. But this way to the border was pretty intense, and I also wrote the last book about it, about these moments and how I actually came to give up my acting career as an actress and start engaging more into political work.
So you started off your engaging. Was it at the tipping point? Was that the moment that you realized for yourself that it was very important to be politically engaged?
I started my acting career when I was 13 years old, and I was mostly doing charity work at that time, and I didn't really feel the urge to engage myself politically until 2 years later, when I had the opportunity to meet Germany's federal chancellor Angela Merkel. And being in the same room with her, it was indescribable, and I was absolutely nervous. During the previous years, I and my family also acknowledged that all the riots and the political tensions in my home country, Georgia, would rise. And the outbreak of the war in 2008 happened on the exact day when my family and I flew into Georgia to have a vacation. And it was devastating. It was a devastating situation. And the only thought of my parents was to get me and my brother out of the country as soon as possible. I was able to film the part where we drove through these danger zones and where the bombs were released above our heads. And thankfully, we got out of these danger zones safely. And this experience turned out to be one that I will never forget. And it motivated me so much to somehow use my voice and spread awareness about what was happening in Georgia. And many fake news was published at that time. And with my video that I made, I wanted to contribute an honest part and make an impact. So I asked that powerful woman for help. And I just talked to the Chancellor of Germany about the current situation of my country and my personal experience. And I believe that this was the moment, the defining moment that highly influenced my commitment to any kind of activism, as it gave me the motivation of understanding that anything is possible once you put your mind to it. And no matter how old you are, suddenly I knew what activism truly means and on what it is based on: embracing self-initiative.
You also came from a career, from a acting career, where you also had to deal a lot with cameras and the way of interacting with the public in another way through media instruments, so television and then later on with the internet. Did that also really help you out with the way you engage with the politics, in the sense of like how to bring it out to people?
Yes. And at first I started writing articles on EU-based issues, as that at the time I was convinced that it was the best way to target an audience. In 2017, I got to write and publish an essay, a book with many other ambitious authors called Who've Not Us. We're still existing. We called ourselves the Young European Collective, and it was a four-step guide that can help overcome a variety of challenges we're facing both in personal and professional environments in Europe. And 7,500 copies were printed, and we toured through Europe and promoted in different schools and universities. And we aimed to motivate and inspire others to engage themselves more in the EU, and we made an impact by getting in a conversation with the people. And still it was not enough. So from one day to another, when Trump was elected and Brexit was happening, you could sense the increasing deployment of right-wing populism in European countries. And I realized that written activism is just not enough. It's fine, but it's not enough. So soon I came across an event in Germany where people were going to the streets with the European flag in their hands and getting in a conversation with passers-by about the values and significance of the EU. And what fascinated me at this time was that they were visible, and that was so important at that time, that they were visible and really on the streets. So I decided to do the same in Vienna, and I wrote a call up on Twitter and waited in front of the Karlskirche in Vienna with many little also self-made Europe flags. And surprisingly soon I found myself with a group of supporters, and it was back in 2017 where 500 people suddenly stood also on the streets there in Vienna, and every single Sunday on 2 p.m. supported these rallies, which were nonpartisan. And at that time, I put my heart and soul into that organization.
And at the time, what did you encounter as the biggest wall against you, or that blocked the way forward?
That blocked the way forward, it's still the same topic. It's the communication, because it's so hard to spread awareness about the European topic, from the European values, European spirit, why it is so important to know about the EU, what is good for us about the EU, and why do we have to discuss it right now and think about our future. And these are questions that people in urban areas maybe know about. There are many little movements and grassroots initiatives who are rising and also trying to make this a big topic in a civil society. But it's not enough. And it's really hard to bring this topic to the countryside, for example, and to also bring it to other European countries than Germany, France, Italy, I don't know, Spain. I mean, for example, in Poland and Hungary, and we need more Europe activists, Europe-wide, who communicate with each other and make European movements and not only national movements or urban and city movements.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
What do you say to some aspiring EU activists to join your movement? How do you engage them? What do you say? Why does it matter to join your movement?
There are no limits to our actions, and every single one of us can take initiative to create change and shape our society, despite where we come from Europe, how old and how well educated we are, and what abilities we have. I believe that everyone has an inner passion for something that is worth seeking and engaging for. And sometimes all that it takes is to follow and to enhance the urge to get active and step outside of the comfort zone. I think there's a change maker, as we said in the Who If Not Us book, in all of us. Now, why EU? The EU has to adjust quickly, as well as strengthen and define its role stronger to the outside world. Because if we remain the same as right now, I do not think that movements like Pulse of Europe will have the same decisive impact and influence than before. The dissatisfaction towards the European Union is unfortunately increasing. So we need to deliberately fight against it. And I don't see any other solution than that the civil society stands together and creates a movement which is called like Europe for Future, like Fridays for Future, but with Europe. And we need a figure. We need someone who's leading it and who motivates us and who makes pressure to the European leaders. And that's the point. When we speak about Europe, still so many people don't really know what we're talking about. We're not talking about the European project itself or the European values or the European institutions in Brussels, but we're talking about the politicians that were voted in the European states. And these are the leaders, and these are the EU we're talking about. And these are the ones which has to see that there is a civil society standing behind a European politics and European values.
And that European politics, does that envision a United States of Europe?
Yes, that's the vision. Actually, I really would like to live in the United States of Europe, but the problem is that many people don't really understand what it is about and cannot imagine that it is urgent in first line, and that what it would be like if we would come to that point. So after a long tours we made with our civil society networks along the countryside, also in Austria, it was really hard to speak with people about the United States of Europe, because there's a sentiment that they would lose something. They would lose somehow their identity, or someone would make decisions over their heads, and the EU would gain too much power. And they don't really understand what it is about. So it's more comfortable to stay inside of the national borders and to give power to a big European institution, which would, in their eyes, make decisions that they don't want. So in first line, and that was my idea behind the last book I wrote, we need a movement that communicates about the reforms that we need right now for the European Union and why they're important. And in the second line, after the conference on the future of Europe, the next step would be to actually bring these reforms that we've maybe written on the paper into life. But at this time, I don't see people standing behind it yet, that much people standing behind it yet, but maybe it can change.
So for the listeners who maybe have already heard other conversations of Europe Matters, we already discussed briefly the Conference on the Future of Europe, which is already taking place since May of 2021, and it's going to go along till April of 2022. And it's a 1 year long conference. People say, why is it so long? Why is it so endeavoring? And what's the idea behind it? The idea is actually to get as many inputs as possible. But the digital platform has been very much criticized to be very not user-friendly, and it uses very basic translation services. So what you're suggesting is a next step. What would that next step be exactly? Because maybe I didn't understand completely what your idea is to go after that. Would you like use the information that we gather to go and actually do real referendums around Europe? What is the idea?
The idea was to implement European convents at the Europe Direct stations that are all across Europe. There are thousands of them. And these Europe Direct centers are there to communicate the European Union to the civil society, to everyone. So instead of having a big social media campaign about the Conference on the Future of Europe, which already sounds very elite and very like a conference, so people do not really think that they can be a part of, because it's so far away and it's so elite, and it should be on the same eye level as the people on the streets. So we have to bring it to them. And I see the possibility and the chance to cooperate with the Europe Direct Centers all across Europe and to go on the streets with that topic and to make visible European convents about the Conference on the Future of Europe and to tell the people on the streets, guys and ladies, here's the possibility to inform yourself in a very easy way, in a very easy language, and to discuss important topics, and your voice matters. We have to give them the feeling that their voice really matters, and that it's not only like a conference of 1,000 conferences and that it's just a marketing gag or something. No, we really have to take this conference seriously. And it's very hard, I know, because of the COVID situation, to be in direct contact with the people. But I think it cannot be made just online and with an online platform. We need also physical presence at Europe Direct Centers.
Did you feel like you lost grip during the COVID pandemic of your activism in the sense of reach of your message? Or did you actually realize that online you could also reach more? I don't know. It depends on the different point of views, right?
It's really both. It's really hard to be an EU activist only online. A EU activist must be underneath of many, many people on the streets and being visible with a European flag, whether on a real flag or on the clothes, or somehow being visible that you're an Europe activist and talk to them and make demonstrations or actions and doing something. It's really about making, it's about doing, but we could not achieve anything when the corona crisis came. But somehow I have a feeling that slowly we come into the direction that we can do it again. Maybe next year we can start again. So I hope so. But this would be a dream that we could connect both. I mean, online, it's also, it went also very well because we reach people over the borders, and it got more European, and we were meeting with activists all around Europe nearly every month. So yeah, this also did not happen before Corona, but we need both of them. We need the physical and the online presence for this topic.
And do you feel like there's a broadening connection between organizations, because there's a lot of different people that are active on a European scale, but maybe are not connected between each other? I don't know.
Yes.
Does your organization also collaborate?
I wish we would more.
Okay.
We would collaborate more, and we would connect more, and do as many things as possible together. But the problem is that often we don't know from each other, and if then we always stay in our own organizations and initiatives, and I think that's a big mistake, because our movement would become a lot bigger if we would all join a common movement. But it's also not that easy, because many movements have ideologies, like movements that want the European Republic, or movements that want the United States of Europe. The other ones want a totally different thing. So I'm talking about a movement that in first line is nonpartisan and includes everyone, because Europe includes everyone. And we have to discuss so many topics, and we need a platform that is objective, that is neutral, that is absolutely nonpartisan, and that can include everyone, no matter from which political party or how old or where they come from. So, and this is a movement that I see in parts of Europe, but the problem is right now that we don't have enough young people there. We have too many older men. We need more women.
Okay.
We need more students. We need more young people generally. We need that vivid and fresh look at the future, and also more dynamic communication, whether on social media and also when we're meetings. I wish more people would join nonpartisan movements like that, that are actually a platform for discussions and the future of Europe, and that are very creative, and your creative skills have no borders at this movement. That's why I love it.
Yeah. That sounds very interesting. And so for people that are listening and would like to join you, which organization do they have to join?
They just have to click on puzzleofeurope.eu. And then you can see if there is already a Puzzle of Europe in your city. And if not, just write me. Maybe you can somehow give my contact details also beneath the podcast or something. But I'm there for you and responsible at Puzzle of Europe for people that want to join and want to make something. So let's do magic. And just write me. I'm here, and I'm so happy when somebody from, I don't know where, writes me and says, I really want to do something in my hometown. I have many ideas, but I don't know how to make them. Do you have any tips? Would you maybe come also to my city? And if the Corona regulations are okay, I would also come to you directly, and we could make something. So I'm very motivated. There are plenty of things to do.
Yeah, and in which languages can you express yourself? Like I've read that you can speak 5 languages. So in which countries can you actually go and do on-podium speeches?
Yeah, I would try my Russian in the Slavic countries, and my French in Belgium or France, and English. I wish I could use it in Great Britain. Actually, there are that want to do things in Great Britain. They are motivated. The Remain EU movement, and I got so much respect for these people that still are fighting for rejoining the EU, and please don't give up, because one day I'm sure that you will rejoin. It's just a question of time.
They'll be back.
You will be back.
They'll be back. Yeah, we've gone broad and narrow. Yeah, we looked at various aspects of what it means to be a Euro activist, a EU activist. For the people that didn't know, it is an actual thing. You can become a EU activist. And Nini actually gave us a lot of insights into that, but also into her personal experience. And that's also where it all started, the flame of her political activeness. Before we round off, is there something that you would like to say before we close?
Yes, I would like to explain one experience I made as a EU activist. So Christmas is coming soon. And one action that we made was the Christmas market, the European Christmas market. So, you know, these beautiful Christmas markets in the cities. And actually, we wrote a humanitarian organization, Lions. Maybe you also know Lions in your city. And we told them we would like to make one day or 2 days a European Christmas, I don't know how it's called, house out of it. So we brought many European flags, little ones, big ones. We decorated it from the outside, and then we made Glühwein and Punsch, so and cookies and everything that you get on these Christmas markets. And it was so funny because you go there and you see so many people there and at this Christmas market, and suddenly you see a little house and it's decorated totally in blue and yellow and in European Union flags. And you ask yourself, what is this? How is that coming there? I mean, is it for a political party or is it from the European Union? No. And then they come to us and they ask us, and we say, no, we're just civil society. We're just normal people that are just engaged and that just want to make the European Union visible. And now, do you want to have some cup of coffee or Glühwein? And so then the people are buying it, and we spend all our money that we gained through this experience for charity. And the good thing about this was all the people that were on this Christmas market came by and talked to us, and we talked about the European Union and how they feel as a European, what they want from the European future, so many topics that were going on. And it was so nice to be on the same island with those people. And I think we had an impact. And these little things, actions like that, they can make a big impact if we do it on many places all around Europe. Imagine, and this is just an example, and we could do so many other creative and nice little happenings that have the same goal. So I'm very open to your creativity, and I would like to be part of it. So just write me and I'm in. And Paolo, perfect. You're also invited if you're in Vienna to come to the European Christmas market.
I will definitely join. Do make a Christmas market dedicated to Europe and actually showing all the different foods and specialties that there are around Europe. And that is a beautiful idea, Nini. I think our time is over. Thank you very much for joining us, and be a EU activist.
Thank you for inviting me, and I hope to hear a lot of calls or emails. I'll be very glad. And Viva Europa!
Thank you all for listening to this episode of Europe Matters. Special thanks goes to my assistant producer, Antonio Mattesini. Let us know who we should interview next by writing a comment and sharing it with your friends on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or LinkedIn using the handle @EuropeMatters. Don't forget to leave a review on whichever podcast streaming platform you use. And if you really like this show, the best way to support us is by making a donation on patreon.com. You can learn more at www.europematters.com. Speak to you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flimsy stands slowing you down? Well, it's time to upgrade. Armadillo builds durable, North American-made tablet stands and kiosks. We're so confident, we offer a lifetime warranty. So, elevate your business and visit armadillo.com. That's ARMODILO.com and use code ACAST for 5% off. Armadillo. Built to last. Designed to impress.